Hi, everyone, and welcome to another season of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. We're so excited to be back with you as we bring you our first episode of 2021 with Kaylee Bynes. I'm Ben Wilson, as we're going to bring you great interviews with a wide variety of our researchers who we've worked with through the VF, and also a couple VF board members, including our very first guest, just like how we started last year with our executive director of the VF, Joyce Coleman. We're going to hear in a couple minutes from Kaylin Young, who is also on the VF board and plays a big role in the Vasculitis Patient-Powered Research Network. You've probably heard of it, the VPPRN. So we have some questions we want to talk about and ask with Kaylin. Kaylee, in the meantime, only a few things worldwide have happened since our last episode in October of 2020. Any new developments with you? You're doing a lot of new work stuff, right?
I am. I started a new job in September, so just a little bit before our last episode, which has been great. Still doing public health research, so, you know, very excited to continue to do that. So speaking of research, we are going to hear a lot from Kaylin. So she's the Director of Research Affairs with the VPPRN, and she has a background in both qualitative and quantitative research, which is really important. And I think it'll just be really informative for our listeners to hear, you know, what's going on the Vasculitis Foundation side of research.
Yeah, and you also are a professional podcaster too, Kaylee. Don't forget that. That is in the business how you transition from one thing to another, leading into our talk with Kaylin. And we'll also ask her about what I think probably the most pressing thing people are wondering about is the ongoing vaccine distribution and how that is impacting our community in the VF, how many people have gotten it, how many people plan to. There's a lot of interesting research and data that's coming along with that as we try to keep everybody educated about the vaccine and the benefits that it'll have as we try to get to the seeing the light at the end of the tunnel in this pandemic. So we'll take a break, catch up with Kaylin Young on the other side, again, the Director of Research Affairs for the Vasculitis Patient-Powered Research Network and a board member of the VF. It's our first episode of 2021. We're so excited to have Kaylin Young joining us next right here on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. And let's welcome in our guest now in our first episode of 2021. How about that? Here on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast, we had for our first ever episode last year, Joyce Coleman, Executive Director of the VF, and now we're bringing in Kaylin Young, also with the VF. So Kaylin, you have some big shoes to fill, first episode of the year. Thanks so much for joining us.
I do. You're absolutely welcome, and just a little bit intimidated.
Well, okay. You know how nice Joyce is. You don't need to feel intimidated.
Yes.
This is a fun, safe space here on our Vasculitis podcast.
Of course. Perfect.
What is going on right now, though, and we'll get into some of the more in-depth work that you've been doing. It has been such a busy stretch for all of you at the VF, and as we alluded to in our intro with the VPPRN, just how much that has done for the vasculitis community as a whole over the last few years, and especially now as we've been really in the midst of the pandemic, and as we've tried to get more information about the COVID in general, as well as the vaccine. So where I want to start is probably as we record this here, as you're hearing this in early March, and we're getting a lot more opportunities for people to get the vaccine. And that is something that for the rare disease community as a whole, including, of course, the Vasculitis Foundation and everybody involved there, it is such a, you know, big element to how this pandemic will go from here. So you were a big part, Kaylin, of this recent community poll where you reached out to, I think it was, 1,700 people or so, talking about getting their thoughts on the vaccine, if they received it yet, how they felt about getting it. So from your standpoint, kind of sitting there and breaking down all the data so far, where do we stand right now in the rare disease community, specifically with vasculitis patients, as far as their education on the vaccine and progress on getting it so far?
So that's an excellent question. It's also a little loaded because the education around the vaccine is limited, you know, kind of for everyone as well as physician. So it's, you know, we're continually updating the information as it comes in and continually grabbing as much data as possible to make sure that we're making the best decisions for our community. So what's interesting is about these community polls is that they were a way for, you know, they're 3 to 5 questions in total, but it was a way for us, the Vasculitis Foundation and the Vasculitis Patient Powered Research Network, to really get a pulse on where our community is and how they're feeling about getting the COVID vaccine. And if they're planning to, and what might be the reasons if they aren't planning to, what are those reasons? Like, why are they not choosing to do that? So we had 1,700 people participate in this community poll with all vasculitides. So it was across all the different types of vasculitis that participated. And within the first hour, we had 800 people that had responded once we disseminated the poll. So yeah, like really compliments to the community, did an amazing job. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, for there are several, there were, you know, 30% of those who responded had had one or more doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. So, and of the 77 that planned to get the COVID vaccine, there were 77% that planned to get the COVID-19 vaccine, and only 23% did not plan or are unsure about getting the COVID-19 vaccine. So that's kind of where the community poll lies in terms of if people are getting it or not. I think that, you know, if you'd like me to kind of go into the reasons across the board in aggregate of the top three reasons why people are choosing or are unsure about getting the vaccine, if that would be helpful.
Sure, I think so. And I also would love to hear a little bit about kind of that risk of negative reinforcement, because when I saw that poll come out, I was so excited. I was like, you know, it's great that we're collecting these data, but then I was kind of nervous, you know, if people see, oh, wow, 23% don't want the vaccine, why? You know, do you think that that's going to cause any nervousness or reticence on the part of patients seeing those kind of numbers?
Well, so that's a brilliant question. I mean, I think that there is certainly it might, but the 23% also includes those that are unsure. So it's not that they aren't necessarily not planning on getting it. It's just they're unsure right now, which I think is where a lot of people are. And I think in the grand, you know, kind of situated in our community in a grander sense, I think that people are able to see that there are lots of things that are going to intersect with their decision to get the COVID-19 vaccine or not. And I think, you know, as the Vasculitis Foundation, as a patient advocacy organization, trying to put out the most recent materials and education around the COVID-19 vaccine. And I know that the latest Vasculitis Foundation educational webinar on the COVID-19, as well as the COVID-19 vaccine, was this past, you know, Saturday on February 27th. And they touched a little bit on, you know, Dr. Merkel and Dr. Anisha Dua had touched a little bit on the COVID-19 vaccine with the information that they have. So hopefully with a combination of education materials and then understanding that 23% also includes those that are just unsure, that it helps people guide people to make their own best decision for themselves, and with recognizing that people are worried about different things. So I hope that it's more informational and rather than influencing how people feel about getting the vaccine.
That's great. What were some of the reasons that people gave that either led to reticence or just kind of uncertainty?
Yeah. So the top three reasons, you know, the first one that, you know, and this was the primary reason, overflowingly slow, was that patients were worried that the COVID-19 vaccine will make their vasculitis or other autoimmune condition worse. That was the number one fear around getting the COVID-19 vaccine. The second was concerns about how new the vaccine is, and concerns about how well researched it is, especially in the context of rare autoimmune and systemic inflammatory diseases. And then the third was worried about getting the COVID-19 vaccine because of the medications that they're on that may lower their immune system.
Yeah, all definitely reasons that I think I've seen in some of our Facebook groups and other things that come up where, you know, a lot of patients are kind of giving each other advice. You know, hopefully we all eventually talk to doctors about it. That's the goal.
Yes, that is.
But it does, it's conversations that we are having. That's really interesting to see it manifest that way. I guess also in addition to the COVID-19 vaccine, you also recently did one about the flu vaccine, correct?
Yes, we did. We wanted to know that one was done in December, and we wanted to know again, kind of where our community is and where there may be educational needs, where there may be, you know, misinformation and or information that we would love to provide out as the Vasculitis Foundation. So through the VPPRN, the Vasculitis Patient Powered Research Network, we disseminated a community poll, not only to members of the VPPRN, but to our entire VF community. And from that, we found, you know, that there was, you know, a considerable percentage of people who were not getting the flu vaccine. And so we asked some of our vasculitis experts, including Dr. Banerjee, who she runs the Penn Medical Center Vasculitis Center. And so we asked her to answer specifically for vasculitis patients, you know, can we bust some of those myths? You know, can we help for the top three reasons why people aren't getting a flu vaccine? Can we help address that with the most accurate information? And so it's been a really great opportunity, one, to have this, you know, kind of conversation with our entire patient community, and then two, to be able to respond to that, the results of that data and provide educational and up-to-date materials that are specific for those with vasculitis.
And circling back to, you know, when you mentioned some of those reasons why people might have concerns, was so interesting. And I'm, you know, I think we're all kind of, especially those of us like Kaylee and I who have vasculitis and we're actively trying to get the vaccine, where every state is different. Here in Las Vegas and Nevada, rollout has been brutally slow. And but even within the last week, we're, you know, just going to sign up, and I don't know how this works, Kaylee, where you are in Maryland, but at least for me, when I signed up and being in that high risk group, and my eligibility will be coming up soon, they even say, if you check that box for being at a high risk with having an autoimmune disease, basically, they immediately tell you, all right, well, just so you know, this vaccine might not be as effective, but it still should, you know, it still should prevent most of the main COVID symptoms, which to me is someone like, obviously I think of it a little differently because we've done so much work with the VF, Kaylee and I, and even though I'm not all that smart, I feel like I at least know a little bit more than, you know, maybe the average person, you know, about this in general. And I'm thinking, seems like an interesting way to phrase that, because automatically you're going to plant some of that seed of doubt.
Yeah.
In it, Kaylee, I don't know, have you, I don't know how far along you are in Maryland, if you've had any sort of a similar, if you've heard anything similar or with that as far as the actual process of going about registering, because that really jumped out to me.
That's really interesting. No, they didn't. They ask obviously about your medical history, one, to sort you, but also just to know any sort of risk factors. There were those conversations about anaphylactic shock for people who have very severe allergies, things like that. But no, I wasn't asked about, or at least told that any effectiveness comes into play. That's interesting.
Yeah, I just, you know, figured I would share that. And it also, you know, it ties in, Kaylin, is something we started to kind of get into here with some of the different studies that we've been doing through the VPPRN, and how it's so fascinating how it's a part of the VF that has grown, really, it seems like exponentially since I think it was 2014 when you first started doing many of these, you know, reaching out to patients and getting this info. And I remember at one point, I think when I first met you, the first symposium I was at, I remember knowing you personally, you had said, I remember when you posted your info in the VPPRN, because there were so few people, you just knowing me personally, like, oh, okay, that's obviously Ben. Now, I mean, for the disclaimer, it's not like now that we have a lot more patients, obviously you're not going to be able to, you know, tell specific people based on what they submit. But I kind of think that displays just how far this program has come, where you could kind of pick out, all right, that's the EGPA guy who's whatever, 20th diagnosis, and And it was easy to know that. From the development perspective and trying to now get more diverse backgrounds and get a better breadth of different types of vasculitis diseases represented within the VPPR. And how do you think things have developed now as far as these general studies, not just necessarily the COVID vaccine study? How do you think those have developed here in the past couple of years now?
Well, it's you know, there's some silver linings to COVID-19, and it's not, I mean, not to say that a global pandemic really has silver lining, but there are some things that we were able to do, especially as an online research patient reported data registry. So what that means is that, you know, patients are able to enroll and then they submit their own data and answer, you know, your own survey questions, et cetera. So I think you're absolutely right, Ben. It's grown exponentially, but even in this past year, we were able to still continue to do very important clinical research, including a longitudinal study where we've been tracking patients with vasculitis for a year now with regard to COVID-19 and their changing feelings about, you know, safety and what are their main concerns and, you know, how are people changing their lives to accommodate for COVID-19? And so we were able to continue to execute research because we've always been online. Whereas our VCRC clinics, you know, the Vasculitis Clinical Research Consortium, you know, research slowed to a painful, almost stop, right? Because we didn't have, you know, people weren't coming in physically into the clinics. And so this was a point where we could really thrive and kind of catch our stride, because at this point we have a very engaged audience of people that want to contribute to research, that aren't, you know, they're using telehealth as opposed to going into offices. So the VPPRN offered this amazing way for people to jump in and continue to contribute to research, but do it safely and at their convenience. So we have grown exponentially, and we're very proud to have included more forms of vasculitis, including relapsing polychondritis, which was just recently categorized as one of the vasculitides. So the growth has just been incredible. And we're very proud of the fact that, you know, we've grown exponentially. We have lots of engagement in these individual studies, and we hope to really continue on that trajectory of involvement and continue to be flexible in a time where flexibility and agility is key. And this was really where the VPPRN hit our stride, you know, seeing huge bumps in enrollment and in engagement and in study outcomes.
So speaking of engagement, I'd love to hear just a little bit more about how VPPRN does outreach. You know, how do you bring these patient voices to the table?
Yeah. So this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart and really kind of how I got involved with the Vasculitis Patient Powered Research Network, coming from a qualitative research background and working in social justice and human rights. It seems like kind of an odd leap to jump into clinical research. However, clinical research for rare diseases, but there was this big paradigm shift almost, right? Where we moved away from the old model where patients just participated in research, but their voices were not a part of the development of research. And consequently, we had, you know, there was, let's just put it this way, there was lots of room for improvement with a patient voice at the table and contributing to absolutely all levels of development of research and research protocols and prioritization, you know, because for many studies, what it's interesting to investigators and researchers, may be fascinating and high quality research. However, it may not be important to patients. And that's really what the VPPRN wanted to capture, is, you know, research that is important to patients. It's brought to us by patients. And so we do that in a variety of different ways. So we have a co-PI dynamic where we have one that is Dr. Peter Merkel. He is the principal investigator. And then we have a co-principal investigator who is a patient, and that is Diane Shaw. And so together, they are kind of the figureheads of our network. But that dynamic of investigator and patient partner comes down all through our entire governance for the VPPRN. So we have working groups that are working specifically on data outcomes. So that we'll have an investigator, and then we have a lead patient partner that sits at that table in that working group that is filled with, you know, patient partners and patient voices. And, you know, we have three or kind of four working groups at this point, all working on different things, but they have an investigator, a lead patient partner, and then our all patient voices. The other kind of big component, which has been, you know, a very rich source of information and helped us prioritize research tremendously, is the ability when you enroll in the VPPRN, you can submit your own research questions. And we do absolutely, we vet those questions, we go through them, and we look at, we kind of categorize similarities in them and then put them into the different buckets that we feel, you know, are kind of appropriate. And then that tells us kind of where people are most interested in, what types of research patients are most interested in seeing. Because if those same general types of, you know, research questions are coming up, that's how we determine that that's of high importance. And so one of the research studies that actually came from, you know, our network was that we had so many questions from people asking, why don't you research, you know, more about diagnosis? How can we improve this? So we created what was called the Journey to Diagnosis study. And it literally came from a question from a patient in our, or really several patients, just worded slightly differently, in our network. It went to our patient working groups that then developed, you know, the actual tools for collecting that data on the time from initial symptom of vasculitis to diagnosis. And the stage one was just a qualitative study. It was a qualitative survey that was open-ended and that asked, what do you think contributed to the speed of your diagnosis, whether fast or delayed, you know, a long time to diagnosis? And I'm sure both you and Ben can speak to this, that it varies significantly, but we want to find out kind of why it varies so significantly. And first we wanted to know, why do patients think it varies so significantly? Why do you think you had a fast or slow diagnosis? And I had the privilege, and it really was a privilege, to dive into, you know, the responses to that. And as a qualitative researcher, or really working in qualitative research methodologies, it was fascinating to be able to read such rich data on exactly why patients felt they had a fast diagnosis or a delay in diagnosis. And then the information from our stage one then helped us create our stage two, which was a more detailed survey that was not open-ended, but was informed by our first survey. And the Journey to Diagnosis manuscript has been accepted for publication and will be out in the next couple of months. So I'll be happy to share that news with everyone and post it on the Vasculitis Foundation website. But it's an excellent example of how, you know, from the voice of patients, it went all the way up into this research protocol that now we're able to publish on, and has led to other really incredible, innovative research where we thought, you know, differently about, this is the patient journey to diagnosis, but how do we improve on that? And what can we do within, you know, big data, within, you know, these health systems to help get patients diagnosed faster, so that those delays in diagnosis are shorter?
That's incredible, especially just the fact that it came so organically from patients. I think that's such a rare thing in, you know, the medical field in general. I think, you know, a lot of times patients, and speaking as a patient, you kind of are along for the ride. You're doing as much as you can, but you're being led by researchers and by doctors. So to really, you know, kind of flip that on its head is fascinating and wonderful. And I'm excited to see the manuscript when it comes out. That should be great.
Yeah, we're really excited about it too, and appreciate all of the contributions of this community. I have to say that, you know, the vasculitis community is really has incredible momentum and really an engaged population that wants to contribute, you know, that wants to have those questions answered, that wants to you know, find more about the disease and increase understanding. And that in and of itself is huge, because the biggest limitation for, you know, rare disease research across the board, especially clinical rare disease research, is participation. It's getting people to participate in research. So it's been a tremendous experience to see that this type of patient registry with patient reported outcomes and patient reported data has really built into something that people enthusiastically participate in. And we are able to create entire research protocols from, you know, collaboratively with our community.
Yeah, I feel like a broken record almost sometimes talking about just the importance of health advocacy from the patient standpoint. It's something Kaylee and I mean, we've talked on this podcast about it privately, you know, we've met up with our friends at the VF symposiums. It's like the thing that it's something we always talk about. And I would imagine that other organizations in, you know, in the rare disease space, Kaylin, are certainly would look at some of the things you've done and seeing how you've flipped that proverbial model on its head now going forward. I also wonder just, and it's probably not, I don't know if it's something, you know, you can really measure it, you know, for sure, but like how from starting this model the way you have and kind of really encouraging that type of participation, I mean, how much more do you think the whole natural sense of that that patient engagement has come in, just because, as to your point earlier, how it's like, as patients, it's usually not something you're going to outwardly think of. It is sort of a mentality that you need to see from somebody, whether it's, you know, from a loved one, your support system, or from a doctor or somebody else. It's usually not something that you'll see most patients do necessarily on their own. So how do you think like the whole concept of this formula you guys have kind of gone with, has it been almost a domino effect where more people have seen it and seen fellow patients do it? Or has it been kind of a quick gradual thing where where as soon as people are kind of open to it, they then become more comfortable and you kind of see things build upon itself from there?
So that's an interesting question, because we were just talking about this morning internally, because one of the things that we do and we want to be very, very reflexive about is looking at our patient engagement and continually coming back to the models that we've created and checking in with our own network to see, are we still meaningfully engaging with all of our stakeholders, you know, with patients, investigators, researchers, everyone that comes to sit at the table? Are we meaningfully engaging with people, and is every voice being heard? Right, that we have space for that. And so over the years, it was interesting, we had a very, you know, structured model that wasn't around having more ad hoc patient groups or groups that were initiative or project based. It was, we have this core of working groups that anytime a research protocol would come to us, whether from the patient community or from other investigators, we would have those working groups work together and review, vet, and then vote on whether or not this was something that, you know, we felt was a VPPRN worthy study. Now, however, what we found, especially in the time of COVID, is that we have been flooded with research ideas and opportunities that we were just unexpected. And so we've started to kind of reevaluate our structure, in the sense that, hey, it's not as agile as maybe it should be. The review process is extremely iterative, which is great, but it's time consuming. And right now, you know, time is of the essence, and we want to be able to, you know, ride that momentum. And so we are currently looking at the way that we continue to engage patients. And one of those ways is, you know, project initiative-based patient groups. So instead of having, you know, the larger working groups work on lots of different projects, we've put a call out to people that are like, hey, to all of our patient partners, tell us, are you interested in working on, you know, the AAV response criteria Delphi? And if you are, then please, like, let's work together with the investigators and let's create a research team that includes patients, lead patient partners at the table that can then, you know, meaningfully engage, but on that specific study. So we're changing the model yet again to be more agile and flexible. And I think to your point, Ben, I do think it's a little bit of a domino effect in that it's, you know, not just word of mouth, but kind of seeing what the VPPRN does and then getting excited about the opportunity to be really hands-on with the process and to be involved in not just the process of developing protocols, but also disseminating results in very accessible ways. And so I think we've seen a lot of enthusiasm around that. And again, we try to be continually responsive to and you know, careful around and self-evaluating around, are we still meaningfully engaging? And what are the best ways to do that? So recently we've kind of we're slowly moving into a different model that will work better for the influx of research ideas and protocols that have come to the VPPRN or that we're generating internally.
That really is like a fascinating model. I have a MPH and I do public health research. So, you know, thinking about that sort of engagement, I think is just really important and definitely something that is kind of a struggle across research fields. I think it's hard to do it organically and in a way that makes patients or participants feel valued. So I definitely appreciate what the VPPRN is doing. I think it's complex and it's wonderful. And, you know, just seeing how much it's grown in the past 7 years is really amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I've been with the VPPRN since before it was a network, before we launched it. And it has been such a pleasure and an amazing, you know, honor to work in such an environment where we have patient engagement that is meaningful and not tokenistic, that we have, you know, investigators and patients and, you know, advocacy leaders all together, you know, and brainstorming and getting excited about research. It's very invigorating and such a privilege. So I appreciate that, especially with your point of view, with an MPH and kind of knowing the difficulty of just in general, engaging patients in research is difficult. And then add rare disease on top of that? And how do you break down the barriers for people to participate?
Yeah, and it does seem, Kaylin, like things, as you were talking about how the development is going, and even from on my end, I remember within the last few weeks, you've launched even kind of the subset of VPPRN, some of these individual research networks now. Mm-hmm. So for me with EGPA, I know you just had a registry town hall meeting, and actually it'll be, ironically enough, we will have Dr. Pagnu on Vasculitis Research podcast. I think he'll be our next guest, I think, right, Kaylee? He and Dr. Calabrese, they're all coming up here in the next couple of months. So it is very timely, I suppose, that we'll have Dr. Pagnu on to talk about kind of the registry's latest activities and all of that and where they're headed as far as development. But it does speak to how, for what you just kind of alluded to, Kaylin, just to trying to grow this through all the different vasculitities within our community as we try to learn more. And I know from mine, at least as a patient, I've always been impressed with just how much a willingness there's been from the research side to just get that patient input. And there have been a number of projects where I know at least a half dozen of fellow patients who have been heavily involved, and it's not just that they've had to be the ones reaching out. It's actually been kind of the opposite, where that desire to hear the patient voices has been big. So I guess and I know we're running out of time here. We'll start to wrap up. But last thing I would wonder about as far as the immediate future here of the VPPRN as we keep going forward. Do you imagine more of these registries for the individual diseases that might not be as well represented, Kaylin? Are those something that you see going forward? I know right now GPA still is pretty far and away the the leader as far as two-thirds of all representation from the responses. So do you see more, you envision more of what we've seen with the EGPA registry continuing here?
Yes. So that, you know, really, and that's kind of the best way to describe the VPPRN. We are a registry of registries. So in each individual, when you join the VPPRN, you fill out what your diagnosis is. So Ben, as you were saying, if you, you know, click EGPA, then you get a whole set of forms that are specific to your disease type that we're looking to, that we're looking, you know, to collect data on. And so it is like its own mini registry within our broader registry, where we can also compare that against, you know, aggregate data across all of the vasculitides to look at, you know, do EGPA patients experience this the same way as others, et cetera. And so for some of the other vasculitides that may be underrepresented or represented or even more rare, where we just don't see a whole lot of research and activity, like urticarial vasculitis, we have a tremendous representation of urticarial vasculitis, and it is very rare. But the hope then is that with this collective voice, with enough numbers, we can conduct meaningful research. It's when we have fewer numbers that we can't do that. So I think you're absolutely right. We are leaning more towards developing even more specific disease forms, but then still offer the opportunity to participate in broader research where it's enrolling all different types of, you know, patients with all different types of vasculitides. So I think that is kind of where we're moving, but it's a good way to think of it as, you know, the VPPRN is the umbrella, and, you know, underneath that umbrella, we have individual registries for each of those diseases.
Right. No, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, not to make fun of you, Kay, but, you know, you have GPA, and, you know, I like to, you know.
Just very popular, Ben.
Yeah, exactly. You're one of the cool kids.
You wanted to be a cool kid. You get it.
I, you know what? You're not wrong, Caleb. I'll say that. You are not wrong there. Again, Caleb Young, who, again, so kind to join us on this first episode of 2021, our second season of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. Again, you can go to their website, vppprn.org. As Kaylin, again, the Director of Research Affairs for the Vasculitis Patient-Powered Research Network, providing some really valuable insights. And I've been a member of that network, filling out the monthly surveys now for probably 5 years, I would say, Kaylin, really shortly after my diagnosis. And it's been great to see the overall progression of everything, and also great to see the work you've done with trying to get the education about the current COVID vaccine out to all of our VF patients. So I really appreciate you taking the time. Congrats, you made it through your first episode appearance, and I'm sure we'll be checking in with you in the future. Certainly hope all of your continued research here with the VPPRN continues to be a success.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
So that wraps up our first episode of 2021. I want to thank Genentech, as always, our main sponsor, for putting this episode on. As Kaylin Young, I was so nice, Kaylee, to give us a few minutes of time. And I think we all, as always, we learn a ton from these episodes. But it is, I think I mentioned earlier, the whole concept of the light at the end of the tunnel, right, with COVID as a whole. And it is great to hear all the positive news about from the vaccine standpoint, and then some of the other studies that are going on as well.
Definitely. And we made the point during the episode itself, but I really am very impressed about how patient-centered the VPPRN really is, because I think that, you know, patients are left out of at least the research question development in a lot of cases. So to actually see that and to be able to trace, you know, a patient question all the way to a publication is huge. So I thought that was just so interesting.
Yeah, and it will lead in really into many of our future episodes. It's been a big theme throughout our first season as well. But our next guest will be somebody who does kind of tie into some of these research efforts as well, you know, is getting patients involved. And that is Dr. Christian Pagnew, who is going to join us next month when we come back for our second episode of the season. He was involved with the EGPA registry. So yeah, Kaylee, I was finally able to, you know, get an EGPA specific guest on. No, all jokes aside, very very active in our community in research, and I'm interested just to hear the results of how that registry went, what they have continued to learn about EGPA, and he's also been a part of some other big research studies as well. So don't worry, Kaylee, not just that, we'll be able to ask him about a lot of other things too, but that'll be our next episode. I know we're excited to get back to recording these on a consistent monthly basis, and that'll be our next guest.
Yep, big things in season 2.
Big, yeah, you're right. Big things in season two for sure. All right, that'll do it for our first episode. Again, go to our website, thevasculitisfoundation.org, as you can subscribe through Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you like to listen. We have all of our episodes. You can go back. We have our 12 full episodes from season one available on all of those apps to listen to if you've missed any of them that we've already recorded. So until then, for Kaylee, I'm Ben, saying so long here on the Vasculitis Visionaries Podcast.